Hello, it's Saturday, November 21st, 2009, and I'm Eric Hufschmid. In my previous audio file for September, I pointed out that strange events have been occurring that are not adequately explained, and people I regard as Zionist agents promote idiotic theories about them. My assumption is that Israeli false flag operations are failing. Not surprisingly, there have been some more mysterious events during the 2 months since I made that file. For example, near midnight on November 18, a large meteor passed through the sky in Utah. It created an incredibly bright flash of light. About 7 hours later, the sun began to rise, and people began taking photos of the amazing trail that the meteor had created. It reminds me of the trails that come from rockets that are fired at Vandenberg Air Force Base, which is near where I live. Yesterday, November 20, the website whatdoesitmean.com posted an article to explain the meteor. They imply that Americans working for President Obama sent a cruise missile with a nuclear bomb to blow up the Denver International Airport, but the Air Force shot down the cruise missile. I suppose it's possible for a meteor to shatter into particles, thereby creating an incredibly bright flash of light, and perhaps certain rocks can leave trails that persist for hours. But I wonder if the Jews were staging an attack on America with some type of military weapon, and if they were going to blame the attack on angry Muslims who were working within the U.S. military, similar to that attack 2 weeks earlier on November 5 at Fort Hood, Texas. I think the attack at Fort Hood was another Jewish operation. As is typical of false flag operations, the news reports don't make much sense. Some initial reports said that there were several men shooting, and that one was killed, and others were arrested. Later, we're told that only one man was shooting, and he shot more than 100 bullets with two pistols, and he's alive. And we're told that he was a devout Muslim psychiatrist, but unlike other Muslims, he would visit strip clubs and drink alcohol. We were also told that there were two attacks, the first at a personnel office, and then about 15 minutes afterwards at a theater a short distance away. It's also important to note that the Zionist agents, such as whatdoesitmean.com, Alex Jones, and Webster Tarpley, immediately began speculating that Obama or the U.S. military was responsible for that attack. Perhaps the reason the initial news reports claimed that several people were shooting is because the Muslim psychiatrist was simply the patsy to take the blame, while a group of Jews were secretly doing the killings. It's also interesting to consider that the second attack was by some Americans who realized that Jews were staging a false flag operation, and they reacted by searching for the Jews and then shooting at them. I wanted to mention this possibility to point out to you that if you ever hear gunshots or see people doing something suspicious, you should consider the possibility that you're witnessing a false flag operation. So don't get frightened or hide. Instead, look for the Jews. On October 21st, about 2 weeks before the Fort Hood shooting, there was another mysterious event. The pilots of Flight 188 flew past the airport that they're supposed to land at. The initial report stated that the pilots were out of contact for about 80 minutes, but even though the air traffic controllers were aware that the pilots were not responding, nobody did anything about it. However, a later report said that they were out of contact for about 3 hours, and that nobody bothered to notify NORAD until the last few minutes. This event is so strange that I wonder if the pilots were testing the air traffic control system in preparation for an upcoming false flag operation, or if this flight was part of an operation that failed. On October 15, 2 weeks before the Flight 188 incident, A 6-year-old boy was reported on a helium balloon. Today the official story is that the boy's parents simply wanted a lot of free publicity. But that doesn't explain why so many Jews around the world were willing to give them millions of dollars worth of publicity on television, magazines, newspapers, and the internet. Furthermore, it seems to me as if there are a lot of people trying to prevent this family from being charged with a crime. They caused a lot of money to be wasted on ambulances and helicopters, and the balloon landed on a private farm, which caused a lot of the wheat crop to be destroyed. Compare how the media and police are treating that family to the treatment Christopher Bolin received from the Chicago police and media. Furthermore, the balloon boy parents fit the pattern of Zionist agents. Specifically, the only people who get publicity by the Jews are those who promote Jewish propaganda. That family promotes UFO propaganda. And as I've mentioned before, I think the Jews have been fantasizing for decades, perhaps more than a century, to simulate an alien invasion or an alien contact. And I think they've been using NASA and the military to develop realistic simulations of alien spacecraft. It's also interesting to note that in the movie called The 12 Monkeys, just before a deadly virus was released, a boy was reported to be stuck in a well. The news reporters then distracted the nation with rescue attempts, and it turned out that the boy was hiding in the house the entire time. A lot of the Hollywood movies seem to be based on crimes that the Jews have committed or that they fantasize about. Therefore, I suspect that the Jews arranged for the balloon boy incident in order to distract us while they were committing some other crime. Or perhaps this was another test of our air defense system. There have been a lot of strange events during the past couple months, and even if none of them were operations by Jews, the evidence continues to build that the Jewish crime network has been so thoroughly exposed and is now so despised by so many millions of people around the world that their network will not survive much longer. Millions of us are also aware of their wolf in sheep's clothing trick, and we realize that our government, military, universities, media, police, and other organizations have been infiltrated with blackmailed puppets and criminal Jews. I have more confidence today than ever that soon there will be so many people who are disgusted with the corruption and crime that people who are fighting this network will be able to come out of hiding and openly form a group to start the process of identifying and removing the criminals. Once that process begins, we can consider whether we want to merely remove the criminals or whether we want to go further and make changes to the nation, such as eliminating the Federal Reserve System. I suggest we consider even more dramatic changes, such as my proposal to design and build some completely new cities, and that we let the cities experiment with different economic systems, government systems, and other social technology. So, since I think the Jewish crime network is nearing the end of its life, and since some people are asking me to do another audio file, I decided to discuss my assumption about what's happening right now, and I wanted to give you some suggestions on what we could do in the future, in the hope that it inspires some of you to start thinking about our incredible opportunities. Hopefully, I won't repeat myself too much. I've been taking notes during the past several months about some of the issues I'd like to talk about, and I noticed that I've listed dozens of issues, and some are similar to each other. I think one of the most important reasons that the Jewish crime network is going to fail is because they have been depending upon naive and trusting people to assist them. I think the Jews had fooled a lot of people into thinking that they're members of a wonderful group of people who will create a new world order. But now that the internet exists, the people who joined the new world order have discovered that they were deceived. I think a lot of them have been shocked and disgusted to discover that their new world order was under the control of psychotic Jews, some of whom engage in unbelievable activities, such as raping little boys and bizarre sacrifices. It's interesting to consider the possibility that the Jews could remain in power if they were capable of making their organization less disgusting. There have already been some strange events that could be interpreted as attempts to improve their image. For example, a Swiss bank was recently pressured into identifying some of the rich people who were cheating on their taxes, and Roman Polanski was arrested, and Bernie Madoff was put in jail. Imagine those type of events occurring on a daily basis. Imagine that every day another dishonest businessman or Hollywood celebrity is put in jail. And imagine this going on for months. And imagine that at the same time, you see some true improvements taking place within the government. For example, imagine that thousands of worthless management positions are eliminated, and that taxes are reduced, and that the wars in the Middle East are stopped. If the Jews were capable of controlling their disgusting behavior and reducing the level of abuse that they inflict upon us, and if they could also bring about some real improvements to the world, then they would reduce the anger towards them, which in turn might make it possible for them to remain in control. However, I have a feeling that the New World Order is dominated by Jews who are so parasitic, selfish, neurotic, and mentally ill that there's nothing they can do to save themselves. I think the number of people who are angry with them will continue to increase. This brings me to the first point I want to make, which is that you shouldn't assume that the New World Order knows what's going to happen in the future. They cannot control what happens. Or I should say, they can't control what happens unless we behave like frightened children and allow them to do whatever they please. If we can find enough people to oppose them, then we can remove them from society and we can determine what our future will be. We don't have to be helpless victims. We can take control of our nation and our future. Please notice the pattern that almost everybody in the so-called truth movement is trying to make you feel helpless and afraid. They describe the New World Order as being an incredibly powerful and mysterious group of maniacs who laugh at us and do whatever they please. These phony truth seekers are constantly predicting that the New World Order will stage a nuclear or biological attack or create economic chaos. These truth seekers are trying to convince you that you're helpless and that you should prepare for disaster by purchasing gold, food, water purifiers, and guns. Conveniently, their advertisers sell those products. Don't allow yourself to develop the attitude of a frightened kidnapped victim who wonders what the criminals will do to him. We can get rid of crime networks and make the future become whatever we want. So don't wonder what the crime networks will do to us. Instead, think about what you would like to do with your future. Don't be a victim. Instead, make things happen. People often respond to such remarks with such questions as, "But what can I do as an ordinary citizen?" The answer is simple. All you have to do is spread information and inspire a few people to think about the incredible opportunities available to us. And if you want to go further, then try to avoid providing financial support to the criminals by refusing to purchase the products of companies that are controlled by them, such as magazines, Hollywood movies, and newspapers. It may not be obvious to some of you, but I can see that the world has already changed quite a bit during the past few years, and I think it's because information is spreading around the world about how the Jews have been lying to us about 9/11, the Holocaust, the Apollo moon landing, and other issues. Don't underestimate the importance of spreading information and inspiring people to oppose crime and corruption. However, don't expect the majority of people to care about the information you provide to them. They don't care about society. They don't want to deal with problems. They want to entertain themselves. but don't let the majority of people get you disillusioned. Furthermore, I think we're going to get help from people within the New World Order. Most of the people in the Truth Movement try to convince us that the New World Order consists of a small number of selfish bankers and European monarchs, but I think the group is very large, and that the Jews fooled a lot of people around the world into joining or supporting the group. But today, many of those people are disgusted with the Jews and no longer interested in working with them. When a group of people have significant disagreements, regardless of whether it's a crime network, a new world order, a business, or a sports club, they have a tendency to split into two or more pieces rather than break down into individual people. Therefore, I suspect that the New World Order has split into two or more pieces, and each of the factions is fighting for control. I'm hoping that one faction consists of some respectable people, and that they create a new and improved New World Order with better management and sensible goals. In such a case, their new and improved organization will help us get rid of the criminal organizations. However, this new and improved organization won't do us much good as long as they remain secretive. Even their own members will wonder who is in control and what their true goals are. In order for them to grow large enough to have a significant effect on the world, and in order for them to acquire the trust that they must have, they're going to have to remove the secrecy and show themselves to us. But once we know who they are, we can investigate them. However, I have a feeling that many members of the group are afraid to identify themselves because they have some connection to 9/11, the Apollo moon landing hoax, or some other crime. This brings up an important issue that I've mentioned before, but I wanted to say a few more things about. I think a lot of the people who were involved in 9/11 and other crimes are best described as victims rather than as criminals. As I've mentioned in other files, the world wars are a good example of this concept. Millions of Americans, Europeans, Japanese, and other people caused incredible destruction, deaths, and suffering during those wars. However, how many of those people should be described as war criminals? I think it's better to describe them as victims of the Jews who instigated the wars and lied to the world about what was going on. And consider all of the American soldiers who are involved with the current wars in the Middle East. Should any of them be arrested for war crimes? I don't think so. I think they should also be described as victims of the Jews who staged the 9/11 attack and fooled the world into thinking that Muslims had attacked us. I would say those Jews are responsible for the wars. I would bet that a lot of the people who assisted with 9/11 and other crimes were deceived by Jews. I think we would be foolish to merely arrest a person simply because he had some involvement with 9/11 or the Iraq War or some other crime. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if there are some people who assisted with the 9/11 attack who still don't realize that they provided assistance to it. Some of them may have been told to put fuel into an airplane or deliver a package to a certain location. I would also bet that some people knew they were assisting with a crime, but they had been deceived into thinking that it was a trivial crime that would help America or the world, and they didn't realize that they had been tricked until after the attack occurred and they discovered what they had been assisting with. The point I'm trying to make is that I think we have to investigate everybody and make a determination of which of the people involved in these crimes should be classified as a criminal and who should be classified as a victim. In other words, these would not be typical trials in which a jury analyzes the evidence of the defendant's involvement in a crime. The jury would not try to determine whether the defendant is guilty of participation in 9/11 or the Apollo moon landing hoax or the world wars. Instead, the purpose of the trial would be to determine why the person was involved with the crime. Was it because he was truly a disgusting member of the human race? Or was it because he was tricked or forced into assisting? The trials would be an analysis of the person, not a determination of whether he committed a crime. The trial would look at his qualities and accomplishments, and a decision would be made as to whether we want this person living among us or whether he should be classified as a criminal. And if he's classified as a criminal, what should we do with him? Should he be killed? Should he be exiled somewhere? Should he be put to work in order to repay society for what he has taken from us? I suppose some people will accuse me of proposing this policy as a way of allowing some of the criminals to get away with their crimes. And since my half-sister is married to one of Rupert Murdoch's sons, I'm sure some people will accuse me of proposing this policy so that the Murdochs will be able to get away by claiming to be victims. But I have a simple solution to this problem. Namely, we don't allow anybody to influence the decision of what to do with a person that they may be biased towards. We all have lots of relatives, friends, and acquaintances. I'm just one of possibly millions of people who has a relative, friend, or acquaintance with a connection to 9/11, the Oklahoma City bombing, the World Wars, the Apollo moon landing hoax, and the attack on the USS Liberty. So, all we do is tell people to stay away from the trials of people that they're biased towards. And if a person lies about his connections, we should consider him a criminal who is trying to influence and manipulate the trial. A more difficult problem to deal with is determining who among us should participate in the trials. The reason this is difficult is because our police departments, military, government, universities, and other organizations have been infiltrated by criminals. Therefore, before we can investigate the people in the New World Order, we have to investigate the candidates who want to participate in the trials. If we're not careful, we could allow criminals to dominate the trials. The people involved in the trials need to be investigated, but who will investigate them? And who will investigate those people? And so on. My only suggestion as of today is that people in the middle management of the military police select some people from the military police to conduct the trials. The military already has their own internal police force, and they already have an ability to investigate people. If the different groups of military police and investigators could clean their organization of criminals, then they should be able to set up a group to handle the investigation and trial of the Jewish Crime Network. During the 1980s, I had to travel to about a dozen military bases to provide some assistance in installing some computer and video equipment for the military police. I met some of the men in their middle management, and I was impressed by them. Many of the Hollywood movies and television programs that I saw as a child had given me the impression that the military is full of men who are almost insane, and who were constantly yelling at each other and demanding that shoes be cleaned, even though that they're virtually spotless. But I was impressed by the men that I met. Unless the situation with the military has degraded during the past 2 decades, the military police should be able to provide us with a lot of high-quality men. There are several other reasons why I suggest we get investigators from the military. One reason is that I don't trust our lawyers, judges, Congress, or other government officials. I also don't trust any of the men who have been elected as sheriff or district attorney. I also don't trust any of the people who are promoted by the media as whistleblowers, experts, or ex-CIA agents. Everybody who has been elected, or who gets publicity by the media, or who wins Nobel Prizes or other awards, should be investigated for connections to the Jewish Crime Network. I also don't trust the top leaders of the military. After listening to what Kay Griggs says about the top leaders, and after learning about former General Albert Stubblebine, I think all top military leaders need to be investigated rather than trusted or admired. Another reason I prefer the investigators come from the military police is that I don't know where else we might find men who might have the emotional strength to stand up to the criminals. Investigating this Jewish crime network is going to require men who can tolerate criticism, hatred, death threats, and angry people. They must also be able to ignore people who cry and beg for sympathy. And they must be able to resist people who try to manipulate them with compliments, praise, and bribes. They must also be able to stand up to people, such as Al Gore, who try to intimidate and impress us with their Nobel Prizes and their college diplomas. We need investigators who can ignore the awards and take a serious look at the man behind the plastic trophy. Another reason I prefer investigators from the military is because the military has been the primary victim of this crime network. People in the military have been killed, kidnapped, tortured, and mutilated because of these criminals. But government officials, lawyers, judges, university professors, and many other people have been beneficiaries of these criminals because they've received money, sex, and all sorts of other rewards. I don't think the people who have been benefiting from this crime network should be allowed to determine who should be classified as a criminal and what his fate should be. I think the victims of the crime network will do a better job of investigating them and determining their fate. Another reason I prefer investigators from the military is because they should be aware of how easily a person can be tricked into assisting with a crime. Since many men in the military have followed orders that they didn't fully understand the purpose of, or that they may not have agreed with, it should be easy for them to understand my remark that a lot of people who assisted with 9/11 and other crimes are best classified as victims rather than as criminals. Another reason I prefer the military be involved with the destruction of this crime network is because I assume that at least some of the men in the military share my attitude about a particular subject that I'm not sure we have a name for. Perhaps the phrase that's closest to describing this concept is tough love. This is the concept of doing something that people don't like, or even treating them harshly, in order to help them in the long run. An example that you might find easy to understand is in regards to manufacturing and video games. There's an enormous market in America for entertainment products, such as video games, Hollywood movies, gambling, and pornography. As a result, there are lots of businesses involved in developing and producing these products. There are possibly tens of thousands of scientists, engineers, computer programmers, and technicians developing software and hardware for Hollywood, gambling devices, video games, and other entertainment products. By comparison, a lot of our industrial equipment and software is being produced by tiny businesses and sometimes individuals. For example, I'm developing my CAD/CAM software all by myself. I don't even bring in enough money to hire somebody part-time to help me. I began selling my first version in 1991. At that time, the CNC machines were extremely crude. My software would send a CNC program to the machines over a serial port, but there was no way to determine whether the machine was connected to the port. A low-cost printer of that era was capable of sending information back to the computer to let the computer know that it was online and whether it had paper in the bin, but these much more expensive CNC machines were so crude that they didn't even let the computer know that they were plugged in and turned on. Some of the CNC machines also had very crude math abilities. I discovered this when my software was purchased by a machine shop that had a particular CNC machine made by a company out of Boston. I was shocked to discover that my software wasn't working with it because that machine had such crude math abilities that it wouldn't accept circular arcs that passed through quadrant boundaries. I never bothered with college, so I don't know any advanced math, but even I knew how to deal with arcs that were spanning more than 90 degrees or passing through a quadrant boundary. That's high school level geometry. So I had to waste my time altering my software to deal with this stupid machine. A few years ago, another customer of my software was using a much more modern and much more advanced CNC machine. Occasionally, the machine would ruin the part it was making, and so we started doing some experiments to figure out if my software was making a mistake or if it was the machine. Eventually, we discovered that the machine had some math problems. After contacting the manufacturer to let them know of the problem, their response was, they'll try to fix it in the next version of their machine, and in the meantime, everybody can just deal with it. They're not going to fix the existing machines. It doesn't matter if you don't know what CAD/CAM software is or what a CNC machine is. The point I'm trying to make is that there isn't much money available for the development or testing of industrial and scientific equipment and software. But there's a lot of money available for entertainment products. As a result, the entertainment products are much more advanced than our manufacturing products. And the situation is getting worse as America loses manufacturing. Now imagine the military applying a tough love policy to this issue. Imagine the military demanding that all people who are currently developing hardware and software for entertainment products be switched to helping develop better industrial equipment. This would result in our manufacturing capabilities improving every year. After a decade or so, we might have robots that are pulling weeds on farms and harvesting strawberries and tomatoes. We might even have robots that are performing routine maintenance for trucks, trains, and automobiles, such as changing their oil. The other day I saw an article about airports installing some machines that can look through our clothing to identify weapons. This technology is truly impressive, but it's completely worthless. The human race doesn't need this technology. All of the engineers and scientists who worked on this technology were wasting their time and talent. And have you considered how ridiculous it is for the American government officials to stimulate the economy by encouraging people to throw away their car and purchase a new car? Many of the people who purchased a new car under that Cash for Clunkers program purchased a Japanese automobile, so the Japanese auto companies benefited more than the American companies. However, even if everybody had purchased an American car, how would that have helped the nation? America has a lot of problems, but we're not suffering from a shortage of car sales. Therefore, we're not going to improve the nation simply by encouraging people to throw their automobiles in the trash and purchase new automobiles. Even if every American were to throw his automobile in the trash and purchase a new American automobile, we would still have the same corrupt and disgusting government, the same corrupt police and fire departments, the same worthless, expensive, and dishonest school system, and so on. There are a lot of research projects that the American government could be funding that would actually help the nation, such as projects that reduce the need for unskilled labor. For example, we could be developing robots and other advanced farming equipment to replace some of the people who are being used for unskilled labor. We could also be developing robots to assist people who are highly skilled, such as surgeons and dentists. We have the technology right now to develop robots that can perform certain types of surgery and dental work. Consider the removal of your appendix. By using such techniques as MRI scanning, a surgeon can get a three-dimensional view of your body. This provides him with the location and size of your appendix. He could then pick up the handles to robotic arms and perform the appendix surgery on the 3D model. Since he's performing the surgery on a computer, he can do the surgery at his own pace, and he can take lunch breaks. When he's finished with the surgery, he can tell the computer to replay the surgical procedure. This would allow him to verify that the program is working correctly. When he's satisfied with his work, you would be placed on the surgery table, and the human surgeon would merely supervise the robot and deal with unexpected problems. If you wonder why we should waste money developing surgical robots, consider that a robot can perform surgery and dental work that is impossible for humans because they can use very tiny tools and get into areas that are too small for human hands. Also, robots can work at a much more rapid pace, and they never get tired, so they could complete the job sooner. Furthermore, robots have more than 2 arms. They could have 10 arms or 20 arms. A dental robot would operate in the same manner. The dentist would take a 3-dimensional view of your teeth and then program the operation. And then the robot would be able to use tiny tools and do things that would be impossible for the human dentist. The robot would finish the procedure faster and with less pain and more accurately. We also have the technology right now to develop robotic lawn mowing machines. There are already some lawnmowers on the market that can mow a lawn by themselves, but they're very crude. Somebody has to put up a wire around the boundary of the yard, and then the lawnmower wanders around the area at random, eventually cutting all of the grass. However, we have the technology right now to make robotic lawnmowers that are much more efficient and practical. The gardener would begin by drawing the boundary of the area that he wants the lawnmower to cut. He would then draw the islands within the boundary that the lawnmower must avoid. After he's drawn the boundary and the islands, he lets the software figure out an efficient path for the lawnmower. This path is then transmitted by radio to the lawnmower. The lawnmower would need some type of GPS device to identify where it is, and then it would simply follow that path. If the current GPS systems don't provide the necessary accuracy, then the gardener could put out a few radio beacons of his own to provide more precise positioning. The gardener would only be needed to deal with unexpected problems, such as objects on the grass. The gardener would become a supervisor of a robot. Furthermore, this technology could be applied to bulldozers and other industrial equipment. The operator of these machines would program the work on the computer, and then the computer would operate the machinery. This would allow this type of work to occur in any weather and even at nighttime. It was about a year ago that I mentioned that I developed CAD/CAM software. One version creates a path for CNC milling machines, but I also have a version for lasers and plasma torches. It would be very easy to make another version that creates a path for lawnmowers or bulldozers. In fact, I'll create a sample job file to show you how easy it is for a gardener to identify boundaries and islands for a robotic lawnmower. I'll make a short video of it also so that you can understand what I'm talking about. Then you'll be able to see for yourself that a person can easily alter the shape of the boundary and the islands without having any knowledge of what the software is doing or how the lawnmower works. If we were to develop this type of technology, the gardeners and farmers of the future would supervise robots rather than enormous numbers of poor people or children. I'm not the only person who's noticed that every nation is wasting an enormous amount of resources and technical talent on entertaining the ordinary people. However, nothing is ever done about this problem. The elected officials never stand up to the ordinary people. I think the only group of people who might have the emotional strength to implement these tough love policies are some people within the military. University professors are considered to be intelligent and educated, but I don't have any confidence in their abilities to deal with life's problems. A lot of professors have an unrealistic view of life, and I think one reason is because we're allowing students to become professors. While they were students, their parents took care of them. And after they graduated, they became professors who were taken care of by the school. They never left the school system. I think it's a mistake to let a student become a teacher. I think teaching should be restricted to older people who have spent years in the real world. In some situations, the ordinary people would probably accept a tough love policy, even if they didn't like it. For example, most people would probably tolerate a policy in which the government shifts resources away from the development of entertainment products to the improving of our manufacturing capabilities. However, I think we need to apply tough love policies to medical issues also. And this is where the ordinary people will cry, and this is why we need to find men who can ignore the tears, tantrums, and insults. For example, consider the concept of sacrificing one person to save other people. The military supposedly follows this policy sometimes, but most people consider it to be cruel. It's also risky because after a person is sacrificed, it may turn out to have been unnecessary. Most people refuse to deal with this issue, so it's normally considered only during extreme situations, such as when people are losing a battle during a war. However, this issue affects us all the time, and we should stop ignoring it. We should find leaders who can deal with it. For example, consider retarded people. There are a lot of engineers, scientists, technicians, and other people developing wheelchairs, drugs, and some very advanced medical technology and techniques to help defective children survive. Imagine if we could make a duplicate of the Earth, and on one of the planets we continue life as it is right now, but on the other planet the military demands that all of the resources and people involved in developing medical technology for retarded people be switched to research projects into understanding how to keep us healthy. On the planet Earth, the retarded people would have access to highly advanced drugs, medical treatments, and other products, such as motorized wheelchairs that are voice-activated. They would have a very nice life and a long life compared to retarded people on the other planet who don't have much technology. However, after several decades, the other planet would turn out to be the nicest for everybody. By putting their effort into understanding health, they would have a better understanding of which chemicals are interfering with fetal development and which foods are useful for reducing cancer. For example, I've been experimenting with jalapeno peppers and chili powder to see if it can get rid of a couple spots on my skin that are considered to be that non-lethal form of skin cancer, and the spots have definitely diminished, but not completely vanished. Is it because of the chemical in those hot peppers? Or is it due to something else I've changed in my diet? I don't know, but on a planet that put its resources into understanding health rather than helping retarded people, the people would be able to study such issues. Life on that planet would eventually be better for everybody because they would be able to reduce cancer, retardation, homosexuality, mental illness, and even criminal behavior. When we put our effort into taking care of retarded people, those particular retarded people benefit, but the human race gains nothing. By comparison, when we turn our back on the retarded people and put our effort into understanding human health, we eventually help the entire human race, even the retarded people. This issue also affects us in regards to school systems. The American attitude is to give special treatment and pampering to the retarded, disruptive, and stupid students. However, if we were to instead put most of our time and effort into helping the nicely behaved students who were willing to learn a useful skill and contribute to society, the end result would be a much better society for everybody, including the retarded and troublesome students. The point I'm trying to make is that I would feel safer if the men involved in destroying the Jewish crime network and who were helping us to develop a better nation are men who have the emotional strength to implement these tough love type of policies. And I assume we can find a lot of those men in the military, but of course I don't know for sure. I also suggest that we prevent Jews from having involvement in the trials and the decisions of what to do with the nation. There's overwhelming evidence that the primary group of people responsible for 9/11, the world wars, and all sorts of other crime are Jews, and therefore every Jew should be prohibited from influencing the trials and the future of our nation on the grounds that they're biased, and we have no idea which Jew, if any, can be trusted. I suppose some Jews will complain that my proposal is unfair to Jews because it allows the Goyim to investigate both Jews and Goyim, and therefore the Goyim will get special treatment. My response to that type of accusation is, yes, indeed, the trials probably will be biased in favor of Goyim and against the Jews, but so what? The Jews decided to embark on a full-time occupation of crime, abuse, kidnappings, and deception, and they can deal with the consequences. Zionist Jews have fooled a lot of people into thinking that they're ordinary, respectable Jews who merely support the concept of Israel. But the internet has allowed people around the world to look into events, and it doesn't take much intelligence or research to figure out that the Zionist Jews have been lying to us on a scale that is truly shocking. It doesn't take much intelligence to realize that the Zionist Jews are responsible for all of the major problems of the world also. I would describe the Zionist network as a secretive, mysterious, international crime gang rather than as a peaceful political movement. The Zionist Jews are wolves in sheep's clothing. They're pretending to be honest, respectable people, but some of them are probably the most horrible, parasitic criminals the human race has ever produced. Before the Zionist movement was officially established in 1897, other groups of Jews around the world had been committing phenomenal crimes and behaving in disgusting and parasitic manners, and for centuries. The Jews have been ruining life for everybody, including themselves. The world today would be much nicer for all of us, including the Jews, if they had been cooperating with other people and helping us to make the world a better place. But they have no interest in working with us. They look at us the same way a flea looks at a dog. They don't see us as a friend or even a fellow human. We're just an object to exploit and manipulate and rape and kill. If you think I'm being harsh, consider what some of the Zionist agents who are posing as truth seekers are saying. Some of them are worse. For example, here's an excerpt of that mysterious man named Dietrich of the Voice of Reason Network on October 16, 2009.
That's the way they feel about settled white societies, is that they try to get in there and upset things. They try to shatter the bonds that hold a society together just because they get off on it. Just they screw up our countries because it's fun, I think. I swear, the more I look into this, Mishko, the more I think this is just what Jews do. They just like doing it. We have such a hard time, you know, conceding this or maybe even understanding it, because it's like, why would you destroy something? You know, it's like the parable with the snake or the scorpion, whichever one you want to use, you know, that you carry them to safety and they sting you anyway. And it's like, why'd you do that? Well, I'm a scorpion. That's what I do. And I swear, it's like, you know, hey, we made this a paradise for Jews. You know, we made it illegal, to mention that Jews were doing all these things that Jews were in fact doing. And we made your vision, your twisted vision of history, we wrote it into law and made it illegal to argue against it. And we gave you 50% of the seats in our high-powered universities. And why did you do this? Why did you wreck this beautiful nation that was bowing to you in every way? It's like, well, that's what we do. We wreck nations. This is what we do.
I suspect that the reason Mischko and Dietrich are secretive about who they are is because they are criminal Jews. And I also suspect that when they criticize the Jews, they're actually describing the qualities they see in themselves and their friends. The Jews insist that their bad image comes from the imagination of evil anti-Semites, but their bad image is the result of their behavior. They are responsible for their reputation, not us. If they had been impressing people with their creativity and honesty, and if they had been cooperating with other people to bring improvements to the world, then people all throughout history would have been happy to have Jews living among them. But all throughout history, we find that a large percentage of Jews, possibly the overwhelming majority, have behaved like criminals and parasites. It's not surprising that people reacted to the abuse with anger and disgust. The Jews haven't improved the world for anybody, not even themselves. The world today would be much more advanced if our ancestors had stood up to the Jews and stopped them from instigating wars, manipulating our governments and banking systems, and committing other crimes. The 20th century could have been a time of phenomenal advancements in technology, but instead an enormous amount of resources and scientific talent was wasted on wars and weapons and security devices. And we're still wasting resources and talent on wars and weapons and idiotic security products. A group of people who ruin life for themselves is hardly a superior race. This abusive, self-destructive behavior is what we see with ordinary crime gangs and retards. If you know about my opinions on crime, then you know that I think that criminals are defective humans. They're not happy, healthy people. They don't fit in with the rest of us. They ruin life for everybody, including themselves. Criminals are analogous to a cancer cell. They're defective creatures that destroy whatever they are in contact with, and eventually they kill themselves by destroying their host. When I was a child, I believed the propaganda that Jews were innocent victims of thousands of years of discrimination, and that they were a more intelligent, more generous, and more loving group of people. I believed the propaganda that the reason the Nazis could so easily kill 6 million Jews is because the Jews were too peaceful and nonviolent to defend themselves or fight back. Fortunately, the Internet has allowed people all over the world to investigate historical events and Jews, and now we can see that the Jews have been lying to us, cheating us, killing us, and instigating wars. During the past few years, I've heard rumors that most of the Jews are innocent, but I suggest we let the military investigate the Jews and determine if any are innocent. Don't let the Jews outsmart you. They want us to feel sorry for them, and they want us to certify some of them as innocent, and they want us to go out of our way to protect the innocent Jews. However, it's not our responsibility to look for or protect the innocent Jews. Actually, if any Jew was truly concerned about protecting innocent Jews, then he would want to help us expose and destroy the Jewish crime network so that the innocent Jews can be identified and protected. But how many Jews do you know of are helping us? I would bet that most Jews are now aware that Jews are responsible for 9/11 and other crimes. And there may be a few Jews who are secretly working with the military or police to destroy the network, but I suspect that most Jews are doing nothing to help us because they're secretly hoping that they win this battle. In other words, they're not truly innocent. They are equivalent to a person who is watching you burn, even though he has a fire extinguisher in his hand. Don't be fooled into thinking that we owe protection to the innocent Jews. None of us owes anything to any Jew. They are the people who repeatedly abuse us. We have never abused them. It makes more sense to say that the Jews owe us a lot because of all the abuse we've suffered from them. Also, you should notice that the Jews make no attempt to protect the innocent Goyim. Actually, they do the exact opposite. They incite hatred and violence and wars. Look at how they were promoting the random slaughtering of Germans, Japanese, and other people during the world wars. And look at how they were behaving after the 9/11 attack. Here are three excerpts from the Howard Stern Show from September 11th, 2001.
Well, you know what? This is our worst nightmare. You knew this was going to happen one day. And it's happened.
Well, it's because we never settle anything.
You know,
that's
right.
I got to tell
and we
you.
Don't, and we don't face the fact that the, you know, and I'm not saying it's the Arabs who did this. I don't know yet, but I'm guessing. The Arab world has to be taught a lesson. Yeah. That we are the boss, and you are going to be our dogs, and you have got to be spanked.
We need to send some cruise missiles over there right now and just start bombing the hell out of them.
Today.
We're always
right
worried
now.
About the innocent civilians who live around.
You know what? Innocent civilians, so what? They shouldn't be living by these guys, supporting them,
I
all that crap,
you.
Okay?
And remember the mistake in Vietnam. We should have nuked those dudes, and we never did. And if we don't nuke some of these countries over there, I mean literally nuke them, fry their children, fry everything, they will never stop.
You know
they will never stop. And I know it's an unpopular thing to do, but you got to be the strong one, and Bush is going to have to make that decision. Target three countries over there and level them.
Yemen is one of them.
Disintegrate it.
I'll post some other excerpts from that show in the page that has this audio file. And keep in mind that Howard Stern was just one of many Jews who were treating us like attack dogs and struggling to incite hatred and violence. And some Jews were encouraging the use of nuclear bombs. Getting back to the issue of conducting trials to determine who is a criminal and who is a victim, I don't expect it to be difficult to find people capable of conducting those trials. I think it'll be more difficult to determine who should be in a leadership role to supervise those trials. The men who are selected to supervise them will have a profound effect on the world. Consider an extreme situation in which we allow Henry Kissinger, Roman Polanski, and Larry Silverstein to be in control. I put a lot of emphasis on leadership because I think we must change our attitudes towards leadership. We have to start treating people in leadership positions as employees who are doing a job. We have to stop worshiping our leaders. Stop treating them like kings and queens. When an ordinary person applies for an ordinary job, at least here in America, the businesses might investigate his background, and they might even make him take a drug test. By comparison, nobody conducts a serious investigation of the candidates who are trying to become president of the United States. Their opponents will look for something about them that they can criticize, but even their opponents won't do a real investigation because they don't want to expose that their opponent is a puppet of the Jews. And note that almost every citizen would be afraid to ask the candidate to submit to a drug test. I think the human race has the intelligence, creativity, and resources to make the world a much better place. But I think we're being held back by the people who are currently in leadership positions. They are simply too incompetent, selfish, mentally ill, or immoral. If we could put better men into leadership positions in our businesses, schools, government, and other organizations, we could bring dramatic improvements to the world. Unfortunately, humans have no emotional interest in selecting leaders. Human emotions are just a slightly advanced version of animal emotions. Male animals have emotional cravings to compete with one another for dominance, but they have no emotional desires to analyze one another or pass judgment on which of them deserves a leadership position. If a male animal gets into a leadership position, the other animals give him blind obedience, regardless of his qualities. Animals have no desire to question their leader. Male humans are exactly the same. We have emotional desires to compete for leadership positions, and so we enjoy competing with each other, but we don't receive any emotional pleasure from conducting serious investigations of people in leadership positions. Investigating people is a chore, not an emotional pleasure. It's work, not fun. Therefore, since we tend to do whatever we find pleasurable, and we tend to avoid whatever doesn't bring us pleasure, our tendency is to avoid investigations of people in leadership positions. Our crude emotions are allowing ridiculous situations to persist in human societies for centuries, such as monarchies. Monarchies don't make any sense. Rather, we are emotionally attracted to that master-slave relationship. People enjoy behaving like a submissive animal around Queen Elizabeth because we have emotional cravings to be submissive with our leaders. Therefore, we receive emotional pleasure by behaving submissively around her. By comparison, we don't receive any emotional stimulation by conducting an investigation of her to determine whether she deserves to be in a leadership position. As a result, if we follow our emotions rather than our intellect, we will behave like a submissive animal around the queen rather than analyze the situation and come to the rather obvious conclusion that she's just an ordinary woman of no importance and that we should eliminate monarchies. We have to control our emotions and think more often. We have to remind ourselves that our emotions were designed for a primitive life and they're not appropriate for this modern world. We have to remind ourselves that our idiotic emotions encourage us to be submissive around leaders, even if our leaders are incredibly corrupt, incompetent, abusive, or mentally ill. We can't solve this problem simply by eliminating monarchies or by removing incompetent or corrupt leaders. We have to deal with the underlying problem, which is our craving to be submissive servants. America doesn't have any monarchies, but the craving to be a submissive servant is just as strong in Americans as it is in the British. As a result, Hollywood stars have taken the place of the kings and queens. The only way we can improve upon the situation is to help people understand that our emotions are inappropriate for this era. People need to be reminded once in a while to treat people in leadership positions as employees who are doing a job. We must remind one another to stop acting like stupid animals. Furthermore, we have to remind ourselves that the people in leadership positions have a much greater influence over our lives and the future of the world than the rest of us, and therefore, if they can't do their job properly, they should be replaced. They should not be worshipped, and we should not behave in a submissive manner around them. We should never feel sorry for people in leadership positions, and we should never make excuses for their bad behavior. When they abuse us or when they show signs of incompetence, we shouldn't ask them to apologize or make them pay a fine. Instead, we should treat our leaders in the same manner we treat waitresses, carpenters, and truck drivers. They either do their job properly or we replace them. It's much more important for us to be critical of our leaders than it is to be critical of a waiter or a sales clerk or a bus driver. Unfortunately, people are behaving in the exact opposite manner right now. We expect waiters to behave in a flawless manner, and if they make a trivial mistake, many people will punish them by making nasty remarks or by not leaving them a tip. By comparison, people in leadership positions can be incredibly abusive, accused of supporting all sorts of crimes, not show up for work, get caught cheating on their taxes, get caught raping orphan boys, but most people continue to behave in a submissive manner around them. Imagine a waiter behaving like Congressman Barney Frank. Imagine your waiter slurring his words like Frank, and imagine that an orphan boy from the Boys Town Orphanage has accused your waiter in court of raping him and other boys at parties. Would you want to go to that restaurant? Would you want to leave a tip for that waiter? It's unnatural for us to be critical of our leaders. While it's easy to fantasize about telling Queen Elizabeth that she's just an ordinary woman who should get a job like everyone else, if you were to actually meet Queen Elizabeth, the moment you tried to say your first critical word, unpleasant emotions would be triggered to stop you from speaking. You would feel very uncomfortable, and those unpleasant feelings would persist until you gave up your plans to criticize her. Our emotions will punish us if we attempt to criticize a person in a leadership position. Unless you're aware of this concept, and unless you're capable of overpowering this particular emotion, you would quickly switch to submissive behavior. And as soon as you became submissive, you would feel emotions of pleasure. And you would feel those pleasant emotions even if the queen ignored you or abused you. Women are more submissive than men, and children are more submissive than adults, and so this tendency to become submissive around leaders is much stronger for women and children. This is why it's so easy for people in leadership positions to abuse women and children. The younger a child is, the more submissive he will become around a person in a leadership position. This is why it's so easy for teachers, priests, and other adults to abuse children. Our emotions were designed for a simple life among a small group of people who we could trust. We were never intended to live in a giant nation in which we're surrounded by people who cannot be trusted, and many of whom have serious mental disorders. In prehistoric times, it was desirable for children to be submissive with adults, and it was acceptable for the adults to be submissive around whichever man happened to be the leader of the group. Our prehistoric ancestors didn't have to worry about their leaders abusing them or working with crime networks. They could trust their leader. But in this modern world, children have to be told that they can't trust adults, and adults must realize that they can't give blind obedience to their leaders. Ideally, our school system would teach children about these concepts and give them practice in analyzing the job performance of people in leadership positions. But as I've described in documents at my philosophy page, I think our school system is terrible. Schools are not preparing children for life. Schools are simply making them memorize information, often worthless information, and a lot of the historical information is actually Jewish propaganda and lies. A school should prepare children for adulthood. Schools should help children experiment with different activities so that they can learn about themselves and discover their talents and limitations. Schools should also teach students that the human mind was designed for a very primitive lifestyle, and that many of our emotions are inappropriate for this modern world and must be controlled. Children need to be taught that they should treat teachers, parents, and other leaders with respect, but they need to realize there is a significant difference between treating a person with respect and becoming a stupid, submissive animal who tolerates abuse. Children need to realize that leaders deserve respect only when they behave in a respectable manner. They do not deserve respect when they lie to us, cheat us, or abuse us. Children should be encouraged to stand up to leaders who are dishonest or incompetent. In 2002, when I first mentioned to some of my relatives that we were lied to about the 9/11 attack, a remark my mother made is that we should respect our president. Most people don't understand the difference between respecting a person and behaving like a stupid, submissive animal around him. My mother is not respecting the president. Rather, she's behaving like a submissive animal towards him. Since my mother's a woman, I don't expect her to stand up to the president, especially not a male president. But the majority of men all over the world are behaving the same as my mother. Everybody in our era should be taught that we should treat our leaders with respect and decency, but we should not become submissive animals who tolerate abuse, incompetence, or criminal behavior. Everybody should be taught that it's acceptable to look critically at our leaders and review their job performance. We are not disrespectful when we investigate our leaders or stand up to their criminal behavior. In fact, I would say that it is the responsibility of adult men to occasionally review the job performance of people in leadership positions and pass judgment on whether they are contributing to society and behaving in a respectable manner. We should not automatically give respect to people simply because they happen to be in a leadership position. This concept also applies to people whose parents are famous or who inherited a lot of money. These people don't automatically deserve respect either. Nobody should get a free ride. Everybody should earn his respect, and his job performance should be reviewed on a routine basis. If you were a passenger on a bus that was wandering out of its lane and occasionally hitting other cars, you would look critically at the driver of the bus and consider replacing him. You would not wave a flag and sing patriotic songs and encourage everybody in the bus to support the driver. When faced with problems, the appropriate reaction is to analyze the problem and wonder if your leaders are capable of handling the problem. You should also wonder if your leaders are the source of the problem due to their incompetence or criminal activities. When America was attacked on September 11th, the appropriate reaction would have been to think about the issue and discuss it. We should have wondered why a group of people would want to attack us in such a violent manner. Unfortunately, our media has been taken over by a group of criminal Jews who encourage destructive behavior. Those excerpts I played of Howard Stern are an example of how those disgusting Jews encouraged people to become angry, wave flags, and give blind obedience to the president. Those Jews fooled a lot of people into thinking that such crude behavior was patriotic and sensible. We must change our attitudes towards leadership. People who cannot look critically at their leaders are not patriotic. Rather, they're behaving like stupid animals. Years ago, I began encouraging people to be suspicious of everybody in the truth movements, and I said that we must investigate all of the investigators. The so-called truth seekers responded by accusing me of starting fights and breaking down the truth movement. They said I was hurting innocent and honest investigators by suggesting that some of them may be criminals. However, I'm not hurting anybody or being disrespectful of anybody when I encourage investigations. The people who make these accusations are simply trying to trick you into becoming submissive and trusting. They want to be in control of the investigations of 9/11, the Holocaust, and other crimes, and they want to tell you what to think about these crimes, and they want you to accept their analysis without questioning who they are or who they work with. Animals don't care who their leaders are. Animals simply follow whichever male happens to be considered the dominant male. Animals don't care if they know nothing about the dominant male. Humans are the same as animals. We'll follow a leader even if we know nothing about him. We don't even care if we know his name. We have emotional cravings to become submissive, but we don't have any cravings to investigate people in leadership positions or pass judgment on whether they deserve such a position. We must control our stupid emotions. We must investigate everybody who wants to influence the world. We should know who our leaders are and who they associate with. We should be able to look at their life to see their achievements and failures. We're behaving like animals when we allow people in leadership positions to keep secrets from us. And as I've described quite a while ago, we have to realize that there's a difference between secrecy and privacy. Our leaders deserve privacy, but they don't deserve secrecy. It's also important to understand that everybody who influences the world should be considered a leader, even if he doesn't have a management job. For example, certain people have been selected to appear on television as commentators or as experts or as whistleblowers. These people are leaders because they've been selected to influence our opinions and the future of the world. But none of them have been selected by us to be leaders. They were selected by a few criminal Jews who control the media. We know nothing about these people they select, or who they associate with, or what they've done during their lives. And we know nothing about the Jews who selected them. We are foolishly allowing secretive, mysterious people to provide us with information and analyses of world events. And consider the mysterious organizations that we refer to as think tanks and charities. These people are collecting enormous amounts of money from businesses and citizens, but we know nothing about their leaders. Don't be intimidated into thinking that you're a terrible person for looking critically at people who influence the world. We shouldn't allow any of them to keep secrets. And don't be fooled into thinking that you owe leaders something. We don't owe them anything. It's they who owe us something. Specifically, they owe us some leadership abilities. If they can't provide those abilities, then they should be removed. We shouldn't feel sorry for them. We don't owe a carpenter or a dentist anything either. If a man claims to be a carpenter, then he owes us the services that he claims to provide. If he doesn't deliver on what he promises, then he should be told to find another job. We should not make excuses for him. And we should review his performance to make sure he's giving us what he claims to offer. If he's a talented carpenter, he will not oppose or resist our attempts to review his performance. And if a man does have leadership abilities, then he's not going to resist us when we analyze his performance. In fact, he'll be glad that we're looking critically at his performance, because only by reviewing his performance will we have a good understanding of his accomplishments, which in turn will allow us to appreciate his efforts and talent. If we don't review his performance, we may not realize what he's done for us, and we may not appreciate him. In 2004, I discovered my connection to the Murdoch family, and for the past 5 years, people have been suspicious of me. This is now the 6th year of suspicion about me, but I haven't been heard from it. Furthermore, if you look through all of my audio files and documents, you'll notice that I never once complained about that suspicion. I don't care if people investigate me and wonder about my honesty. I'm not hurt one little bit by people who investigate me or who are suspicious of me. The people who complain about investigations are trying to fool you into giving them blind obedience. It's just a trick. And some of them are very clever, so watch out for this trick. For example, Alex Jones complains about this in a subtle manner. He doesn't mention me or anybody by name. Rather, he complains that the mysterious feds and offshore bankers are encouraging fights with their COINTEL programs. Here's an excerpt from November 4, 2009, in which he defends himself and that bizarre former U.S. military general named Albert Stubblebine and his wife Rima Labo. Actually, there's not enough time remaining for that excerpt while keeping this audio file within the 80-minute limit of an audio CD, so I'll stop the audio file now and continue in part 2.